This is Unbroken, healing through storytelling. Just to let you know, we have a vodcast on YouTube where you can watch the edited highlights of the episode. And don't forget to subscribe. If you fancy the full audio version, simples, just keep listening. Oh, and if you've got a second, please give us 5 stars and a review. It really helps us stand out and get this important message to even more people that need to hear it the most. Meantime, enjoy today's episode.
My guest today is Jazz Ampal Farr. She is a resilience ninja, an international speaker, coach, and author. Hailed in the US as the British Oprah, Jazz has traveled the world advising governments, educators, and helping tens of thousands of people with her bespoke leadership development programs, training courses, and motivational speeches. As a successful entrepreneur, mum of 3, and former teacher, she knows a thing or two about galvanizing people into taking action. With a passion for resilience, positive disruption, and a human-first approach to everything, Jazz's energy is infectious, and you can't help but become mesmerized and fall under her captivating spell.
I was born brilliant, and I have continued in that vein. It's not removing the idea of being in pieces. It's being able to reform in a way that enables you to go forward with a new story or the next story. The reason that I am like this now is that I choose to be like this. And I choose every morning. Sometimes I wake up, it's not till 11 o'clock I choose to be a positive disruptor. But I choose because I've tried being depressed and I've tried being like hating myself. It sucks. It sucks. I married a white 52-year-old vicar when I was 26. Funnily enough, it didn't work out. That's why we get married and join bird watching groups and go dogging. I mean, we're just constantly trying to be with each other in some way or shape or form. I reframe. I have people that will hold me accountable. I do all the things that will stop me from returning to my baseline. And my baseline is misery. This is what it looks like on the other side of the pain. This is what it looks like.
So welcome to the show, Jazz. Lovely to have you here with us today. How are you doing?
My standard reply is I was born brilliant and I have continued in that vein. So I'm good. I'm good. Thank you.
We will have a discussion about your brilliance and all of that after this, but because the show is called Unbroken, yes. I always start with the first question, which is what does that word unbroken mean to you?
Well, it means unbreakable. That's what it means. I've got a t-shirt with that on. I have sort of jazzisms on t-shirt.
I might have to get
resilient ninja, positive disruptor, unbreakable. Because it's broken is a state, and unbroken is where that state is changed and removed. And this idea of being broken and unbroken and broken and fixed and broken, I kind of feel like being outside that unbreakable means that I will bend, I will be on the floor, but the time between me being on the floor and getting back up again will get shorter and shorter and shorter. And that is the resilience part of it for me. It's not removing the idea of being in pieces. It's being able to reform in a way that enables you to go forward with a new story or the next story. So I kind of feel like the unbroken is really unbreakable, and part of being unbreakable is being able to reform and reframe and pivot and go again. It's knowing what to do when you don't know what to do. That's what unbroken is.
I like that. Knowing what to do when you don't know what to do.
Yeah.
And that's where a lot of people got stuck. But life, you didn't start off with this positive bouncing back attitude. Life was tough when you were a little girl, wasn't it? You were put into care just at 8 years old, homeless as a teenager. Can you tell us a little bit about that at those times?
Yeah, well, I was born in the 70s when it wasn't trendy to have a little brown baby. And my biological mum didn't know she was pregnant, so was rushed to the hospital for appendicitis. I came. There was lots of contention among the family, as you can imagine. And my mum wasn't really interested in being a mum. So I lived with my grandparents. Mm-hmm. And I think she must have, my granddad died, there was two of us, me and my brother, and then my mum was pregnant again. So my nan must have said, you've got to get married. And she married a violent drunk when I was 6. And we were beaten within an inch of our lives. I was sexually abused from 6 till 11 when I ran away. When I did run away, I was broken. I was defeated. And I was actually rescued by a pimp. I met a pimp outside a pub and he took me in to take care of me. And I remember he took me shopping and I'm 11 years old, standing in this changing room holding a dress. And I know I'm not safe, but I don't have the word sexual exploitation. I'm trying to make a connection with someone in the dressing room. Like, are you kind? Can you help? Mm-hmm. I don't know what to do. And in that moment, I remember one of my first leaders, a teacher, Mrs. Cook, she always used to say I was brave. And in that moment, one clear thought came to mind, and that is Mrs. Cook wouldn't wear this outfit because it wasn't a dress, it was lingerie. And that was enough. I became what she said I always was. And I just walked out of the changing room, walked past Jason. He was leaning on some bras, rolling a joint. That you don't get escapees at that stage. So he wasn't looking for me. Went into the police station and I did what I thought adults did in police stations. I slammed my hands on the counter and I said, I demand the right to remain silent. Because I thought that's what you're supposed to do. And I remember the guy going, all right. And that was, we'd been in foster care already for physical marks. We were beaten and we were neglected. That was evident to see. But I'd never spoken about the sexual abuse because I assumed that was my fault because I'm broken and I'm worthless and I'm cheap and I'm guilty. So I came from a place of being in pieces, of being worthless, of hating myself, hating others, hurting people who wanted to help me. And there was a huge journey up to the point, you know, I didn't want to be on the planet. I didn't want to be alive. And that was a rational decision to make in the situation that I lived through. But there was always, I always had these individuals who didn't do massive things. I call them everyday heroes. Yes. They did witness. They didn't do things to me. They did things with me and for me, or they stand with me in the chaos that was my life. And it was like one of those birthday candles that you blow out and it gets lit again. They were there. It's like they were carrying this, handing over this golden baton to each other. And just because of that thread, that returning to disconfirming data that we believe in you, you're worth this, things started to change and change to the extent where, you know, education was the thing for me. I got to university and I graduated and became a teacher, which was just like, can you imagine? Mm-hmm. That was like the most amazing thing in the world to be able to be those here. I mean, it was, oh, I remember.
So your everyday heroes were five teachers at your school,
yeah,
weren't they?
Yeah, yes. Five adults in school. Yeah. I mean,
they noticed bruises on you. They'd ask you if you've been fed that day. They encouraged you.
Yeah, they gave
you.
Me biscuits. They said hello. They asked me how I was and waited for an answer. They, you know, one tutor at uni gave me a book of stamps, which was the equivalent to an iPhone when I was at uni, so I could write to friends. I mean, it's these tiny, small things that put humanity on someone who doesn't feel they deserve it. Like when I was homeless, one of the things I noticed about sitting on the street, no one asks your name, no one makes eye contact, no one touches you. Mm-hmm. So if you take those things away from your everyday, you're not human anymore. Yeah. You lack humanity. So
people
what
don't
I do,
even look at someone that's sitting on the street, do they?
Yeah, but that's the thing. It doesn't cost you anything just to get eye contact. You can't catch anything from looking at someone. So what I've trained my kids to do is the least you can do is look at them and smile. That is the least you can do. And you just do it. Next time you see someone sat on the street, look at them and just smile at them and watch their face transform.
Oh, well, I am a patron for an organisation called Save Women in Scotland, and we support homeless women because they can't stay at home because of sexual abuse. So I am one of these people that will speak to you and will touch you and will ask your name and ask this.
I mean, the touch has to be appropriate. It sounds like I'm manhandling anyone who's just sat down for 10 minutes. But there's something around, you know, chatting, introducing yourself. So it depends what you've got time to do. But it's just... the reason that I am like this now is that I choose to be like this.
Yes.
And I choose every morning. Sometimes I wake up, it's not till 11 o'clock I choose to be a positive disruptor. But I choose because I've tried being depressed and I've tried being like hating myself. It sucks. It sucks.
It's exhausting.
So this is how I choose.
Yeah. So, but you say that, you know, these everyday heroes, I guess really they gave you confidence in yourself, didn't they, to believe?
I don't know if it, yeah, I dispute that because people often say when I'm on stage, you're so confident. I'm like, no, I'm comfortable.
Okay,
I'm comfortable with failure. I'm comfortable with it all going wrong. I know how to pivot. So
they gave you the confidence, you say in your TEDx, to have your own family.
Oh, yeah, that was, I mean, that. But again, that is being comfortable with failure. Like saying yes to marrying my husband, who I met on Marie Claire, like, you know, man of the month. I mean, insane, my last
I didn't know that part.
I remember saying to him before we got married, can you promise to that you will love me every single day, that you will stay in this relationship? And he said, no, I can't, but I can promise to choose to wake up every day and love you. I'll promise that. And I remember saying, that's not enough at the time. But actually 21, 23 years in, however long it is, that is the choice that we make every morning. And it's like getting married every day. It's like the excitement of being married every day. Because it's agency.
Yeah, and you say you broke the cycle. The family is a success because they won't ever be in a position. You've been a nun. My story is very different to yours, but I always say becoming a mum, which I didn't do, was my best revenge.
Yeah.
So.
Well, it's for me, it's I spoke at a conference called Breaking the Cycle, and I said, I've got an issue with your title, because breaking the cycle is just what, escaping abuse as a woman in a marriage. That's just one thing. Then there's something around like taking yourself out of that story and not letting your past become a step for your future. And then there's something around disrupting that limiting narrative. I mean, it's a whole thing. And I kind of feel like that was a journey. And it's taken years.
Yes.
And for me, I was never going to get married. I was never going to have kids. I was desperate to be part of a family. Desperate. And what's happened with Ed is that we have this unique togetherness. Like when I've packed my bag, when we first got married and first got together, I'd be like, I'm leaving. I can't cope anymore. Because I couldn't cope with the love and the kindness. And he'd take a suitcase from the wardrobe and start packing and say, okay, where we're going. And it's, you know, that's rare and beautiful.
Yeah.
And it's almost like this liberating myself from fear and not letting fear drive the bus has been the big determining factor.
And that is so important because, you know, I consider myself a thriver, you're a thriver. And some people, they're always the passenger in the bus, but we are the drivers. And I wonder what the difference is. How do we have that ability to thrive and tap into our resilience and change our stories? And some people never do that. What do you think that's about?
It's a good question, actually. I mean, I think it's about where you put your loci of control. Some people feel that it's like some people have everything and still, you know, be on antidepressants and struggle because of external things they feel affect them. Some people have nothing and they manage to, you, case in point, build this incredible life where you will not let what has happened determine who you will be.
Yeah.
But I honestly think it's we're designed to be in community. Even the most introverted of us as humans, we are designed to be connected. That's why we get married and join bird watching groups and go dogging. I mean, we're just constantly trying to be with each other in some way or shape or form. And for me, it's certainly been that commitment to connection, even when that obviously has worked out really awfully for me. The secret of that connection, it's not external validation. It's almost like peer agreement. Like identity is up to you. You can identify as a housewife from LA County if you like, but belonging requires agreement. You can't have belonging without other people agreeing. And it's that belonging piece that fuels you as an individual. And I think that like the antidote to, you know, addiction is belonging. The antidote to people joining fringe groups is they want somewhere to belong. They want somewhere to belong. So it's finding out how do you craft that and find it. And people find belonging in the strangest, in prison. I've worked in prisons where, you know, people find a new way of being because suddenly they make a connection that they couldn't make before. So I'm really big on that. And I think the pain, like I said to some prisoners, after everything you've been through, you're completely within your right to be bitter, twisted and hateful. And one guy with gold teeth and a gun down his neck tattooed, who was particularly frightening, he said, but, and I went, oh God, there's no but, mainly because I was scared of him. And then I thought, no, there is no but, there's an and. And if you want quality of life, you've got to choose a different way of being. And it's not an easy choice. It's really hard. You need someone else to shine.
As you say, it's not an overnight fix, is it?
No.
It's a process of undoing all that conditioning and undoing it and just peeling back all those layers. But I also think we can't do it in isolation. Like you say,
no,
we need a good team.
Yeah.
We need support. You know, I think of all the people that came into my life at the right time that were there to support me in their different ways. And I couldn't have done my journey without the support. So I often wonder if it's people that are isolated that can't reach into their, tap into their resilience, because we need good people around us, really, don't we?
Definitely, definitely. And I'm struck by the amount of people that I very rarely do a keynote where people are always queuing to talk to me afterwards. And some people tell me really hard things and difficult things that they've navigated. And lots of the times people talk about, you know, having made previous suicide attempts or not wanting to be around. And I'm overwhelmed with the kind of understanding that if all the people who had tried to kill themselves had succeeded, how my life wouldn't be like this, because the impact that they've had on me has meant that I have this amazing, I have a life of beautiful, you know, and that would not have happened if people hadn't been being in the right place at the right time. And so it's not just the effect on you that it has, it's the ripples of influence and change and transformation.
Absolutely.
That it has on the people around you. It's a gift. It's a gift. But it takes what I do, the work. It's like, you don't get to be this awesome, phenomenal human female sat on the sofa with your fingers crossed. You go to therapy and you have a lot of terrible therapists. You have to kiss a lot of therapists before you find a problem. I mean, yeah, but you do therapy. I learn to be a coach. I read a lot. I make mistakes. I reframe. I have people that will hold me accountable. I do all the things that will stop me from returning to my baseline. And my baseline is misery and defeated. That is my baseline. And so I choose not. It's like an addict. I always feel like my way of being is my sobriety. Yeah. And if I don't work at my sobriety and commit to it every day, then I end up living in imposter syndrome and feeling worthless.
I guess you could take sobriety and put the word choice in, or mindset, or attitude, or energy. Yeah. All of those is, where do you put it and what do you focus on? Because I guess you get back what you focus on. But I know you had a short spell on The Apprentice, which you mentioned in your TEDx, which is brilliant. I will put the link for your TEDx. But sadly, what people don't know, they see this very confident woman. But as you were talking about people with addictions that week, you also had to identify the body of your brother, didn't
you? Yeah. My brother and I were 2.5 years apart, and we had the same experience and journey. When I left home at 11, my stepdad was making money out of trading me out to other men. So when I left home, everything fell to pull. And I protected him. I was the older one. So when I left, he didn't have the resilience. I mean, I was a kid, I was broken, but he didn't have the resilience that I had. So it really affected him. And I had 5 everyday heroes that stood for me. He didn't have that. So he took a heroin overdose 2 weeks before his 40th birthday. And of all the drugs, heroin is the one that makes you forget you're human. Like, it doesn't just get you high or take you down. You are no longer, like, there is no pain in that place.
Total numb out, really, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
It's really just want to escape.
Yeah, and the thing was, my brother and I had various arguments about how to live life, and the choices that we make. And I showed very little compassion for him in the choices he made, because I wanted things to be different. That's the thing about abuse. Our parents abused us, but we were angry at each other. But there's something always, you know, connecting with his family and with his nephew, and I are like really close. But there's something around understanding the connection that I felt versus the isolation he felt and the end result, you know. And it was when that happened, the BBC were great, I've got to say, because I rang them. They spent a lot of money on The Apprentice. And you've got to go on that show, You're Fired, with Dara O'Brien at the time, and let comedians rip you a new one. And I literally phoned up and said, my brother has died. I don't know when I'm going to see you again. I can't do any filming. And they're like, it's fine. And they sent me flowers. I mean, we talk about human first.
Yeah.
And then I sort of went to see him. And you know, all I could think of all the time when I got back was, that should have been me. When I identified him, all I could think, that should have been me. That could have been and should have been me. And the fact that it wasn't, you have the whole thing of survivor's guilt. But then eventually that turns into, I know how to have that past, how to be in toxic relationships with guys, how to be divorced and abused and hurt. I know how to come back from that and shine like no one has seen. And I'm not telling anyone, because I'm being a selfish coward, because I'm scared of what people will think of me. And if I spoke about it, then maybe Paul wouldn't be, that wouldn't have happened. If he knew what was possible, maybe that wouldn't have happened. So that was the shift. That was the shift to do a TEDx talk and to speak about this. And it was a huge risk, because I was giving away my entire, you know, persona that I'd built up. Like, I used to lie. I used to say that I used to pretend I had a brother called Tarquin, because I used to think that made me look acceptable. I didn't want anyone finding out I'd lived on the streets. And I was like this X Factor backstory. I was so ashamed of who I was. And I was in education. I didn't want people finding out about my past and then thinking I was a danger to kids. It was terrifying, you know.
And actually, it would have been really inspiring to kids at school, wouldn't it?
Yeah, that's the thing. The very thing I was afraid of, people knowing that I didn't have it all together, is the very thing that people took agency from.
Yeah.
To know that
where you start is not where you finish, and you can get to uni, you can become a teacher, you can do what you want, you can now inspire others to change their direction. You really give them a new map, don't you, with a whole new direction. It's possible.
That's good. A new map. Yes, it's like an alternative route that you cannot see because everybody in your position makes the same decision. Like 3% of children in foster care get to university. They don't stay there. They don't finish because it's impossible when you get. I'd know it. That's why I was homeless at uni. I had nowhere to go in the holidays. But 3%. And these people, children end up in foster care. They're there through not through their own volition. No. Anything could have happened. So we're losing talent. We're losing creativity because we're not finding a way through. That's why my Young Speaker Academy is about people who've gone through adversity, children who've been in foster care, gone through adversity, and have lived to tell the tale so that other people know there is a next. That's what's important.
So you're passionate now, not just speaking out yourself, but also helping others to find their voice as well.
Yes. Well, I'm really big on speakers in general. Like I go to conferences. I'm often the only woman. I'm often the only brown woman. I've lost count of how many conferences. I stand at the door when people are coming in and I chat and I welcome people. I've lost count of how many men have given me their coats. So I take the coat, I take it, and then I take it on stage and I say, I'm just going to look after this. Is it yours, John? Is it yours? You don't even have to pay me £2. But it's because I'm happy to meet people where they are. But I'm often the only one. And then I hear stories and I think, but this is a story that if I'd have known that that was possible when I was struggling, that would have given me encouragement.
Absolutely.
And you've got to heal yourself first. People want to talk when they're in trauma, and I'm like, no, you've got to. No, you're no
you
good
can't,
to anyone.
You can't. You know, you've got to. The scars, really, or not the scars, the wounds. You can speak from the scar, but not the wounds.
Yeah, not the wounds. Yeah, it's you first. I kind of look at it as suffering, surviving, which is basically breathing. It's not that high a bar. Mm-hmm. Thriving is great. Being truly alive. That's where we're trying to get to. And then beyond that, driving change. And people want to go from suffering to driving change. And I'm like, be kinder to yourself.
Yes,
sustainability means you've got to do the work. Yeah, you've got to do the work. So, but for me, it's about how do I amplify those stories? How do I help others? And also, I get lots of schools in particular want me to come in and speak. And I have to look after my own well-being. I can't churn my story out every day of the week. I'm doing a lot of speaking. So I want to like mentor young people and then give them the gigs and say, you know, go and speak about what it's like to be on the other side of a compassionate adult and what it's done for you and how it changes so that people realize, actually, this is how teachers in particular, this is how amazing I am. This is the difference I make. And that we all know behavior, any behavior is communication, but it's looking at what's behind the front a lot of the time and being able to speak directly into that. So it's changing.
The bigger the front, the smaller the back, really, with the stuff that we put in, you know, in its place.
That's perfect. I like that.
Do you ever get tired of sharing your story?
Oh, my God. No one's ever asked me that. What a great question. Do I get tired? I get tired of people not being brave enough to make a change. I get tired. Not tired. It's heartbreaking. That's why my big message is 10% braver. You'd have to start a revolution. Just raise your hand in a meeting. You know,
absolutely.
Finish at 3:30 on Friday if you're a leader and say, so long, suckers. I've got a life outside of work. Yeah. You know, just do one small thing. Do I get tired of sharing my story? I know because I make sure that I'm able to show up as my full fat self every time. So pre-COVID, I did 4 gigs in 4 different cities in 3 different countries in 1 week. I woke up in Cardiff on the last day and I didn't know which city I was in. And I came back and said, that's not kind to everyone. I can't show up as my fullest, fattest self if I'm, you know, like driving a car in 4th gear the whole time. Mm-hmm. So what does it look like for me to? So I have parameters. My team put parameters in place. So I don't do a gig every day. I can't do more than this travel in this month. And so I have these jazz hacks. That's what we call them.
Good.
The keepers, everyone, you need Madeline hacks, you know, things in place to stop you. So I can't get tired because I am such a kind of radical advocate for my own well-being. I'm the most important person on the planet to me. So,
but self-care is not selfish, is it? You know, people think it's like, oh, I don't think I can take time off. I don't think I could do that. But actually, it's imperative to our well-being, self-care.
Well, I want to change the world. So I've got my greatest and most valuable resource. It's not my iPhone, is it? It's me.
No.
So in fact, that's the thing. It was when I realized I would recharge my iPhone every night without fail, but I wouldn't recharge myself. I'd do
that's
myself
brilliant.
Once every other month.
Yes.
And I'm like, this is insane. That's a piece of tech. I'm a human.
And people panic. Well, I panic. My kids laugh. If I'm on 80%, they can go to like 4% and they're fine and it's red. But I'm like, oh, I need to charge my phone. It's on 80%.
Okay. Yeah. Every time you charge your phone, you've got to be like, and when did I last charge myself? And what does that look like for you? Like, you know, I love energy and ideas. This for me is life-giving, talking with you. But also there's the idea of just going for a walk, of just, you know, running with the dog, of laughing with my son. I make sure over the course of a month, because I don't do it, you know, every day. I'm going to spend all day at work or all day being a mum. But I, over the course of a month, I look at the balance. Where have I spent time? Where have I invested my time, my energy, my focus? And I make sure that that kind of pans out. Because I get that. People saying, oh, I know, it's selfish. No, it's not selfish. Wouldn't drive a car into the ground and then take it to a garage and be annoyed when the mechanic says, well, it's not fixable. Yes. But we do it to ourselves.
You forgot to put petrol in it. What do you expect? Yeah. But that word balance is key, really, isn't it? Because it is about balance. It's, you know, we can't do all of one thing and nothing of another thing and expect to get good results. It really is.
Definitely. And more results. I want to leave the planet better than I found it, not as I'd expect to find it. So that means I have to fill my cup myself, overflow, and then what's in the saucer, that's what I give to everyone else. But if I'm not topped up, I start giving people my cup and then I've got nothing left. It's like when you get on a plane and they say, put your own mask on and then pick your favourite child or whatever they say. I haven't been on a plane in a while. But, you know, it's like it's counterintuitive sometimes. But if you want impact, if you want legacy, if you want to live life to the fullest, you've got to put yourself first. There's no other way of doing it.
And nobody's going to do it for you anyway, are they?
No.
It's our own journeys. Even though we need everyday heroes in our life, and we can be those heroes for people, even the smallest of acts can make such a difference as we're here. We still need to do it ourselves. But as much as you love speaking, clearly other people love you speaking because you've just won some prestigious awards, haven't you? Tell us about that.
Birthday, and there was a speaker awards was on, and I'm like, no, it's my birthday. If I want anything, I don't really want to go. But then I spoke to my family, my team, my friends. I'm like, let's just all go. It's if we don't win, we can enjoy the food. Mm-hmm. The first thing I get is runner up, highly commended for best.
So you have no idea you're even nominated.
No, I was nominated in two categories.
Okay,
but my internal imposter said, well, I don't know what you're even coming for. But I went in spite of all the evidence and data of fantastic reviews that I get all the time. You've still got that voice, haven't you? So I get the highly commended, and I sit down and say to my ops manager, "Is this still count as an award?" And she's like, yes, you won something. You know, you won. Because I want to put award winning on LinkedIn. I want to put that. Mm-hmm. And then they announced best live gig and they announced the highly commenders. And I'm not in that. My name doesn't come up. And I'm like, oh, all right. But I know what to do next year. And then my name's not in highly commended because I've won it. And I'm just like, oh my gosh, that's incredible. And then I sit down and everyone's sort of celebrating and I'm hugging my daughter. And then they announce Speaker of the Year, which they've collected from all the scores that everyone got across the board, mm-hmm. highly commended in all the areas. And I hear this speaker was highly commended in all the areas. And I think it was someone else. Leanna was a speaker who kept winning, highly commended and going into that. And then they called my name and there's a beautiful picture on social media of everyone around me screaming and me just...
The disbelief.
It wasn't even disbelief. It was this moment of like, from foster care to Speaker of the Year, it was, I cannot believe that this has been the impossible made possible. Yeah. And I just sat in that for a moment of the enormity of the journey of a broken kid locked in a cellar, in foster care, abused, on the streets, homeless, hungry, to this. And it's just like, I have to tell people this is possible. That is why I speak. And it was this glorious moment of like, that. And I got the award and I came back and I said, well, I must be a good speaker. I mean, I must be. And it was like turning the volume down on imposter syndrome.
Yeah, so I was going to say, there's still that doubt, even though you are supremely confident or you come across that, there's still that doubt that you can tune into, but then you choose to turn it down. You turn down the volume.
It's because you've got, it's a moment in time, isn't it? Like you're a great footballer when you score a goal, but 10 minutes later, not necessarily. So it's the, how do I stay in that truth of I am able to take a crowd from, you know, laughing to crying and back again in two sentences. They laugh, cry and leave on a higher. That's true. I know how to connect with people. I can craft a story. I have an important message that people take action after. They don't just get inspired. They do. That's true. But also it's believing that that is something that I have worked for and crafted and is now the truth about me. And my old story of being cheap and worthless and guilty and dirty, that is a story that no longer serves me anymore and is not the truth about me. And it's like having a jacket that is so well worn it's more comfortable than the new coat that's scratchy and got the labels in still. Yeah. But you've got to wear the new coat to get it like the comfortable jacket that you have from years ago. Yeah. So, yeah, it's beautiful. And I feel like I've been on RuPaul's Drag Race and I've snatched the crown. I'm like my reign as Speaker of the
Queen.
Yeah, Queen Jazz. Where's my crown? Crying out. I'm going to make myself one. So it's such a massive honour. And what was great was all the speakers coming up going, oh my gosh, I'm so pleased for you and I'm coming for you next year. I'm like, oh, let's great. Do it. Let's do it. So brilliant. Yeah, it's exciting. It's
huge
exciting.
Congratulations. That
thank
is
you.
A fantastic achievement, which is not hardly surprising. When you sit and listen to you fizzing over here, you can see how audience would be inspired. But as we're coming to the end, is there anything else that you would like to say or leave us with some advice for someone maybe that's listening in, that's struggling or can't yeah. possibly understand how they'd ever get to the space that you're at?
Yeah, and it's this. You can choose whether you see this as just words, whether you hear the words and say, but that's not for me. But I have been wherever you are. I have been in a situation where it feels that there are no options and no choices. And when you've exhausted every ounce of your ability to compromise and try and be 10% braver, there is always more. There is always another avenue. You can't see it because you're in the middle of it. But if you find someone, if anything I've said has resonated with you, find someone who you know and you trust and talk to them. Be 10% braver. Tell them your impossible, immovable obstacle, because two people are always stronger than one. And that's what I wish someone had said to me repeatedly at any time before I turned 47. You know, that would have been, I really want to encourage people. I am not superpowered. I'm not unique in any way, but this is what it looks like on the other side of the pain. This is what it looks like.
Jazz, thank you so much for coming along and sharing your story.
Oh my
with
gosh,
us.
I
know it
good.
Will inspire so many people listening in, and it's just brilliant. So keep on being that beautiful lighthouse that you are.
Thank you. And thank you so much. Any chance to hang out with you is just a no-brainer for me.
You're
so
welcome.
Thank you for inviting
Last
me.
Time we were sharing a taxi together.
We were squished in a cab.
Thank you.
Unbroken, healing through storytelling. If you haven't already, go on, download, subscribe, give us a 5-star rating. It really helps us get this important and life-changing message out to as many people as possible. There is already a selection of fantastic episodes to choose from and a brand new one coming soon.
Unbroken, healing through storytelling. Playing now on all the main platforms, including Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher for Android, Google Podcasts, Amazon Music, and here. Play Unbroken, the podcast, with Madeline Black.